This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
On Friday, October 21st, the Norris Group proudly presents its 9th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts will join Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event is not possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Housing Wire, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club for Women, MVT Productions, the San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, Inland Empire Real Estate Investment Club, Think Realty, and White House Catering. Visit isurvivedrealestate.com for event information and tickets.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Gary Acosta. Gary is the co-founder and CEO of the National Association of Hispanic Real Estate Professionals, NAHREP, and a 25-year veteran of the housing industry. NAHREP is the nation's largest minority real estate trade organization, with over 20,000 members and 40 local chapters. In his capacity of CEO, he created the Hispanic Wealth Project, a new 501c3 nonprofit organization with a strategic plan to triple Hispanic household wealth by 2024. Mr. Acosta also founded or co-founded several mortgage, real estate, and technology companies, including New Vista Asset Management, Counselor Max, and RealEstateEspanol.com. In 2013, he co-founded the Mortgage Collaborative, a cooperative of mortgage companies who work together to increase profitability and market share. So, Gary, welcome to our show.
Oh, good to be on. Thank you.
You know, honestly, the first thing I thought about is that I just no longer think of Hispanic households as anything other than us, which I guess is a good thing. I live in Riverside, and trust me, they're us.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, when we started NAHREP 15 years ago, we spent a lot of time telling people that, you know, this big market was coming and it was going to make a big change in the industry and you need to prepare for it and so forth. We don't have to make that case anymore. It's pretty clear that this is not just a niche market anymore. This is, I think, to your point, part of the just the core market in general now, for sure.
So when we talk about the needs of the Hispanic household, we're really talking about the needs of across-the-board households, honestly.
Yeah, I would say with a couple of caveats.
Okay,
right?
So, and that's what I wanted to talk about. What are the caveats?
So Hispanics, because many of them come from immigrant backgrounds, you know, are predominantly kind of new to the process. So most Hispanic home buyers are still first-time home buyers, and even though they are, you know, earning money and more money every year in increasing their educational attainment and so forth, there's a pretty substantial wealth gap. And so, you know, first-time home buyers generally need low down payment mortgages. They never sometimes need help with down payments and so forth. And then there's the whole sort of cultural piece as well. So about 25% of Hispanic home buyers prefer to negotiate the transaction in Spanish. And so those nuances sort of create, I think, challenges, but also opportunities for the industry in a pretty substantial way.
You bring up an interesting point. Now, we're in the business of loaning to investors. And we did get a call just as I left the office 15 minutes ago. And it was a Hispanic-speaking person, and we don't have paperwork for that. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a challenge because we don't want them finding something they don't understand. So is Hispanic paperwork becoming needed, or is it more leaning toward the Hispanic household needs to understand English? Which way, or both?
Well, I think that's a great point. I think so. I do think it's both. You know, for any business, right? You can you can wait for the consumer to come to you, or you can go where the consumer is. And there are still a substantial part of the Hispanic population that needs, in-language support. And that could mean through marketing collateral. It could mean through the disclosure process and maybe even some of the documentation. I don't expect that we're going to be signing Spanish language loan documents anytime soon, just because, those are legal documents that need to be recorded. And I think it's a much more complicated process to get to that point. But documents that assist the buyer to understand the process, to help make them better make intelligent choices about what particular service they should pursue or what loan they should pursue and so forth, I think those things are needed, and there are companies that are providing them. And NARP is one of the organizations that's actually out there disseminating that information as well.
One of the problems with the downturn is that we went too far with programs. The things that you're mentioning would be helpful now were sort of part and parcel to what went on, and then an extended version of it. So down payment assistance programs existed prior to, say, 2005 and 2006 and 7 and so forth. And nothing down or low down and all of that. And that it's got a connective tissue to, okay, that's very damaging. We don't want to do that. So how do you start that up again without raising the hair on the necks of the people that passed the rules?
There's definitely, I will, certainly say that there were people who got mortgages, back, 2008 pre-crash and before that, that should not have, and they weren't prepared for it. They didn't have the financial stability to make that a successful experience for them. But for the most part, I think that when we look back and say, what are the things that really kind of led to the crisis? It wasn't really people getting a down payment assistant mortgage on FHA loan or on a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac product. It was generally folks that were getting zero down transactions from subprime lenders or just getting into loan products that had teaser rates and were likely to increase substantially in terms of payments in a very short period of time. Those were really the ones that got people into trouble. People who got fixed-rate mortgages, people who got conventional mortgages, they generally did pretty well. But some of that got kind of lost in the smoke of the crash. And so people tend to sort of just kind of lump it all together. We shouldn't do that again because it ended badly last time. Well, now we've got different set of rules. Lenders have to, validate income and capacity now in a way that they didn't have to before. Those types of things are generally not as big a problem as they were back then. I think the market is ready for this sort of thing.
And by the way, I completely agree with the concept of a nothing down loan can be very safe. It should exist, in my opinion, because we have a really unique opportunity right now. We have an interest rate that starts with a 3.
Yeah.
We could have a lot of homeowners lock in the biggest bill they're going to have in their life at a very low rate. And as their earning grows, that becomes less and less and less of a factor. You and I experienced that in our lives. Sure. We'd sign up for a house payment. I remember first house payment I signed up was $191, man. And I went, wow. And before 5 years went by, it was half of my car payment. And it was like I didn't have a house bill. And it was fantastic because maybe I got lucky. That was between, let's say, 74 and 80 where prices went crazy. But it gives a chance for people to lock in the housing cost. And if you're a renter, that never happens. It always floats to the biggest bill you have.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. So, we've had zero down payment mortgages for 50 plus years, and they're called VA mortgages.
That's right. And if you look at a chart, I'll let you talk. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and those loans have performed exceedingly well through both good markets and bad markets. So we know the product itself isn't the problem. It's definitely been, some of the execution of the product and the way we went about qualifying people, I think, was really the mistakes that we made in the industry.
I think the one thing that we could add, and I don't know who would be the powers to be that would give that a shot, but when I was in the business in the beginning of, let's say, mid-70s, we had something called a simple assumption. So FHA would have a loan in place. Remember, interest rates started going crazy, but there was a whole pile of interest rates that were reasonable, 7, 8%. At the time, that seemed reasonable because the new rate was 15. And you could take over a loan what they called simple assumption. I filled out one sheet of paper, sent it to FHA and said, I'm the new buyer. Here's $45. Take his name off. My name's on. And that was it. There wasn't a qualifying process. If you created a mortgage product today that was underwritten properly with nothing down, and it had the ability to, in case of failure, move to another buyer who could do a simple assumption, and the only criteria is the loan's current when it closes, you could have homeownership, you know, go back up to a very reasonable level very safely, and create virtually no foreclosures, because that loan that starts with a 3 would either walk to a new owner occupant or to an investor.
Yeah. Yeah. And we may see that again. I mean, those were some terrific programs that got a lot of people into homes and resolved situations that were challenging for other families. And they were sort of a win-win. And we lost a lot of that, again, during the sort of heyday of the, subprime marketplace and some of the other loan products that that became, the sort of root of the problem down the line. But, I would certainly be enthusiastically supportive of some return to some of those products for sure.
Well, on the panel in October, there's a lot of people that are key to some of these discussions, you know, because they go back to Washington, and I think you probably have been there and had conversations with people that make things happen. And it's an exciting panel, and I'm glad you're part of it. Homeownership got over 69% nationally. Now we're down multi-decades low. It's, 63-ish. And I wondered what the journey was for the Hispanic household. What had they gone up to, and have they been as negatively impacted by what happened?
So, great question. So the Hispanic homeownership rate has traditionally lagged the general market rate. For a couple of reasons. And the number one reason, more than anything else, most people don't really recognize this, is because the Hispanic population is so much younger than the general population. And so the two biggest metrics with respect to predicting home ownership is income and age. And so Hispanics are 10, 15, in some cases 20 years, depending on the market, younger than the general population. So, of course, they're going to have lower home ownership rates. So the rate around in the year 2000 was roughly around 46%. That rate got up to 50% at 2008, which was really kind of the peak of the market. And then just like the general market, it started to rescind after that and has gone down every year except for last year. So last year, the general market homeownership rate dipped for the 12th consecutive year, but the Hispanic homeownership rate increased, and it was the only ethnic demographic that did during that period of time. So a lot of enthusiasm for homeownership has remained within the Latino population. It is now really the sort of growth engine for the marketplace today and perhaps for the foreseeable future.
So what is the demographic? What are the ages? Are you talking about are a great many of Hispanic households fit into the millennial group, or is it older than that?
So 26% of all millennials are Hispanic.
Okay.
So more than a quarter of all millennials are Hispanic. The average or median age of a Hispanic, individual is 35. So in their mid 30s.
Okay. Wow.
And so the general population is closer to late 40s, early 50s. So it is substantially younger and is really kind of entering those kind of prime homebuyer years. Another kind of interesting factoid is Hispanic households are twice as likely to be made of two parents and at least one child. So the sort of traditional, family structure is still very much the common issue with Hispanic families. And that's not necessarily the case with, the general market, which is now, they're much more likely to be single, people get married a lot later in life and so forth in the general population. And then the white population is actually, moving in large numbers into retirement years as well. So, who's going to come in and fill those gaps? Who's going to come in and buy those starter homes? Who's going to come in and fill those workforce needs that we need as a society? More often than not, it's Hispanic families that are coming in and filling those gaps.
Yes, if you look at the projections for population gain, I mean, by far and away for California, especially Hispanic population is going to be the driver.
Yeah, one of the things the California Association of Realtors does, just to kind of demonstrate that point, is they track the most common surnames of home buyers every year. You know, what was the number one most common surname? You know, was it Smith? Was it Johnson? What it was? And so last year it was Garcia. In fact, 8 out of the top 10 most common surnames for California home buyers were Hispanic surnames.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You know, the bulk of the growth going there, but you brought up a really interesting point because John Burns just did a book on demographics. I got a pre-copy of it and I've read it, and it's fascinating.
Okay.
Because, and he's going to be on the panel, so it'll be a very interesting discussion between you guys. And one of the things he pointed out is that a household isn't made up of the two adults and the 1.3 or the two kids. By and large, it's something different. And that's changed how people qualify. You know, what you had said, you know, just now, you have a single adult and a kid, that's a different group that's going to have a less of an ability to qualify for financing. And the household has definitely shifted, and with people forming households later, and you can point to, you know, economic reasons or whatever, but people are not doing at 30 what people, you know, when I was 20, you know, we were doing it at 20.
That's absolutely true. And so, you know, the households are very different. And, you know, some of them are multi-generational. Some of them are just structured differently. And you're absolutely right. That affects the way and people qualify for mortgages today. And the market needs to adjust to that, because that's not just a Hispanic phenomenon. That's a general market phenomenon for sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the we write reports once in a while about saying, OK, what's next? And one of the things you really can see a stark difference is in the wealth of the of retired people that own a home versus the ones that don't. I mean, you're talking about near poverty level, you don't own, and you're going to make it fine if you have one. And,
exactly.
You know, because housing went through this crash and it, you know, it really became very popular to say, well, you know, it's really, and even from very smart people, people with PhDs saying, yeah, it really makes no sense to own. And you just, oh, man, I just don't understand that comment because of my in my own life, you know, and you've written a play. Let's talk about that just for a second. I read in the bio, I didn't read it out loud, but you were involved in writing something about a gentleman's life named Jerry?
That's correct. Yeah, so the show is called 53 Million and One. And yes, it is something that is not common, right, for a trade association or a real estate practitioner to dabble in theater. But we, as an organization, have always looked for different ways to communicate our message, to help people understand the Hispanic experience a little bit better, to sort of demystify the process of serving the Hispanic community and so forth. And so, you know, you can do that in presentations, you can do that in video, you can do that, you know, using different mediums. But we, you know, stumbled on the idea of creating a theatrical presentation for a couple reasons. One, I had seen, I don't know if you saw, Mike Tyson's Undisputed Truth.
Yeah.
Which is something he did on Broadway, right?
Mm-hmm.
A one-man play, and he narrates, you know, essentially his life, and it's supported with video and with music, and it was a lot better than I expected it would be.
Exactly.
All that. You're right. And I thought, you know what? You know, that's a medium that we can utilize to tell our story as well. And I have this friend who's very active in the association, actually a former president of NARA, who had this incredible story. He also happens to be, you know, a really great speaker and presenter and a professional musician, who would think, right? And so we decided to use his story as sort of the model, and we created a script around his true life story. We call it 53 Million and One because it's in reference to there are 53 million Latino stories in America, and this is just one. And that's how he opens the play. And he walks you through various stations in his life, including how he first immigrated to this country when he was less than a year old, all the way to, you know, the challenges and successes and triumphs and setbacks along the way to where he is today, which is a very successful real estate broker in Southern California, and you know, has a great family, and is living the American dream.
You know, I really put a lot of weight on owning a house, and I got married at 17, and just really struggled in the beginning. I got fired 5 times in a row and all that, but
wow,
I saved $20 once in a while in a can, and we finally got it to where it was a down payment. And I was 21 when I bought my first house for $21,000, took over a VA loan with $500 down. And I remember when I speak in front of people, every once in a while I actually still get the emotion. I remember mowing my lawn for the first time on my own house, and I honestly felt like a man for the first time. That's how powerful that experience was. There was something about...
I could see that. Yeah, that makes sense. That's very cool.
Yeah, I have a grant deed that says, I didn't have a dime worth of equity. Stuff didn't work, but inside of that space, I got to call the shots for the first time, and man, it felt good. And
yeah,
I think people deserve that shot. I really do.
They do. And, you know, I mean, you're right. There are people out there challenging whether or not homeownership has the same appeal as it once did, whether or not it's always the best financial decision. But there's something intangible also about buying a home for all the reasons that you just laid out. And for Hispanics in particular, and the play really kind of talks about, how Jerry gravitated to the real estate business, and it really was because just the idea of owning a home was, you know, at the top of the list in terms of their aspirations, because that's where the family congregated. That's where the family celebrated their love for one another, their growth as a family, their ambitions, and so forth. And so the house itself, you know, plays a much bigger role than just purely an investment.
And, you know, and so it should. We wrote a report in 2006 called The California Crash. We expected prices that would go down, worst case scenario, even by half. So I own an expensive home in Riverside, and I'm contemplating selling it because I know it's going to go from $1.2 million to $600,000. And I actually made the phone call to be a renter. I called a guy up who had a really cool house in Riverside. I said, I'm not your typical renter. I'll pay a year in advance. And he said, do you mind if I ask you a question? He says, do you have any pets? And there was a pause, and I said, I'm so glad you asked that question, because it's actually not a question I ever want to have to ask or answer again in my entire life. And so I kept that home. I sold it for half, and I could care less because I still got the call of the shots in my square box.
That's a really great point also.
Yeah.
Good story. That's great. Yeah.
Gary, we've run out of time, but I've enjoyed talking with you, and we're going to have a great night in October with the panel.
On the 21st.
Yeah, on the 21st of October. A really good time. And thank you for your contribution to the industry and for, again, the Hispanic population that I just feel is so much a part of us, I don't even think of them as separate.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So I look forward to it. Thanks for the invitation. Thanks for the interview. And look forward to seeing you then.
Okay, Gary. Thanks again.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Auction.com, Coachella Valley Real Estate Investors Association, Coldwell Banker Town & Country, Elite Auctions, In a Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, LA Green Designs, LA South Rhea, New Western, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club, Orange County Building Industry Association, Pacific Premier Bank, Pasadena Phoebe, Pilot Limousine, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Realty Executives Inland Empire, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Sunoco Corporation, South Orange County Real Estate Club, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA Services, Weston South Coast Plaza, Wholesale Capital Corporation, Wilson Investment Properties, Inc.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.